The following podcast is an Embassy Row production.
We are gathered here today to bury the idea that sports are dead in NYC.
We know that every city in America considers themselves the sports capital of the world, but New York City is actually the sports capital of the world. And if you don't agree, you can fight me.
Boston sports fans, you can kiss my wicked fucking raw ass currently parked in a car outside a Harvard yard.
First off, New York has more professional sports teams than any other state in the country.
We got the Yankees.
The Mets.
The Giants.
The Jets.
The Knicks.
The Nets.
The Rangers.
The Liberty.
The Red Bulls.
And the NYCFC.
And technically the Buffalo Sabres if you want to haul ass all the way up to Buffalo, which is if a Yeti fart became a city.
And these teams, they don't just play in stadiums. They play in some of the most famous buildings on the planet.
Yankee Stadium is considered the Sistine Chapel of baseball. And then there's also Citi Field, which is, it's fine. I'm a Mets fan and it's fine.
The announcer MSG proudly says before each game that people in attendance are currently sitting in the world's most famous arena. And it doesn't get any more New York pretentious than a New York voiceover actor bragging to a bunch of New Yorkers that they're sitting in the world's most famous arena currently located in New York.
Big sports means massive cash, with NY sports teams hitting net worths that would make Gordon Gekko stop. The Yankees are worth $5.25 billion.
The Giants, $4.3 billion.
Knicks, $5 billion.
And the Rangers, $1.65 billion.
Together, that's half a Bezos.
And in 2020, like everything else not Zoom, sports were forced to shut down because of coronavirus.
Many even consider March 13th the day that coronavirus started in America, because it was the day the NBA announced it would be shutting down for the season. I consider March 13th, the day coronavirus started, because it was the first day I considered hoarding toilet paper. But that's a personal thing.
Sports leagues were able to keep their seasons somewhat afloat by constructing bubbles, expanding testing, and playing in front of zero fans, which all gave us at least some sort of way to enjoy the game, but it wasn't a true substitute for watching sports in person.
Is the world opening back up enough to save this city's professional sports empire? Or is sports in NYC dead? I'm Eitan Levine. I'm a comedian and writer from New York. I've written for the New York Times and Amazon, and I eat most of my meals from Duane Reade. It's a lot of pharmacy sushi.
I'm Jackson Clemens, writer, comedian, commentator for BuzzFeed, and you know what? I trust dollar pizza over the dollar menu at McDonald's.
This is NYC is Dead, a podcast focused on proving how alive this city actually is. Every week, we speak with New Yorkers that have direct influence and insight into the industries that this city is famous for, and hear how it's changed in the wake of 2020.
At the end of each episode, we'll get a little closer to answering the question, is NYC dead?
This week we spoke with Peter Schrager from Good Morning Football. You know, he stopped by the studio. He stopped by our studio.
Our Zoom-mudio, if you will.
A lot of people don't know this listening to the podcast, but we record this in a sprawling 15,000 square foot studio space at the heart of New York. It's actually the top two floors of the Freedom Tower. A lot of people don't know this.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is the podcast to make this comment, but I do think that the Freedom Tower is super haunted. Like,
exist, 100%. It feels haunted. Like, it does not feel like a place I want to be in for more than 10 minutes ever. But
here's the thing. The Freedom Tower is not haunted by scary ghosts. It's haunted by business ghosts who are like working hard or hardly working.
And then they like go into the dream work.
And then they float into a copy machine. Anyways, this has nothing to do with Peter Schrager.
Peter Schrager, this man has been on the ground floor of everything that's been happening in the sports industry throughout the pandemic and also before the pandemic. And he's a host for Good Morning Football, which is one of my favorite shows, and you guys should watch it. And this is our interview with Peter Schrager. Take us back to March 2020.
So I work on a daily sports TV show in a studio that usually has about 50 people working on it. We've got people from audio to production to makeup to hair. And we came in the day after the Tom Hanks Rudy Gobert day, which is what I'll look at it as. Tom Hanks got it in Australia and it was like, whoa. And then Rudy Gobert from the Utah Jazz came down with it and they canceled a basketball game and basically put the NBA on ice. Now they were canceled. So we go to work the next day and it's like a typical day and there's this weird chill and we're in New York City and like there's this weird deal, like Spotify's in our building. I think they didn't have any employees come in that day and usually it's packed with like young hipsters from Brooklyn drinking lattes and like it wasn't that. We did our show and like we usually have like four or five guests. They all canceled and we're like, all right, something weird's happening. And that was basically our last show for 6 months in studio until October. But that day there was like this really weird chill in the air and everyone was on pins and needles to see what was going to happen. And we basically shut it down and quickly adapted and did the work from home shows, which a week earlier would have sounded absolutely impossible, but we all adapted because that's just what we did. We suddenly went from, you know, sitting there talking about football in a very serious manner to now living in our basements. And it was basically they sent us all this equipment and they're like, sink or swim, we're going to figure this out. So our show, which is a four-person show that's super interactive and super conversational, it was like, all right, you talk, 3, 2, 1, now you talk, 3, 2, 1, delay, you talk. And we somehow managed and like kept the show afloat. And we got nominated for a sports Emmy because of like our content was good, all this cool stuff. And yet if you had told us a week before the pandemic that this was going down, then we would all told you there's no way we can do our show in four separate places. It's just impossible, especially over Zoom or whatever the technology we used was.
Was there a problem trying to figure out stuff to talk about for a while? Like, you know, there's no sports happening. You're still running a sports show.
Yeah, so we were buoyed by the NFL draft, which wasn't canceled at the time. So this was late March. The NFL draft is always mid-April. And we were like, all right, let's just pour our focus into that and be the diversion, because it was bleak, as you can imagine, on every news channel and with no real entertainment that was being produced. Like, we were a live show that happened every day and we talked football. So if you wanted to turn your brain off, we were there for you. And of course, we acknowledged what was going on, but the NFL draft did happen and the players all were selected and the coaches, you could see inside their houses. They drafted by Zoom. It was crazy, but it happened. And we were kind of like this comfort or this chicken soup for everybody who was going through some really hard times.
How does New York stack up against other sports cities though?
All right. So I'm super bullish on New York. And I think the New York sports fan is the greatest sports fan in the world. And this includes, you know, each fan base in their own different way. And I think the Knicks are like good now. The Nets are filled with superstars. The Jets and Giants fans have hope.
The Rangers have hope again.
The Rangers have hope. The Islanders are good. I mean, all these teams. But I think New York sports is going to have an amazing 2021-2022 because of the hibernation of this whole thing. Like, everyone being stuck inside and everyone not being able to go see these games, I think you're going to notice that people appreciate the idea of live events for sure, but also galvanizing and being with other people, celebrating something together. I know it sounds very Pollyanna, but like, New York sports fans are so passionate that I think they're going to come out in droves. And it's going to be an amazing celebration of like, not only do we love these teams and not only do we want to cheer these teams on, but I love you, the guy in section 23, who I haven't seen in a year, but you're a familiar face to me. Or I love you, the vendor at the Mets game, who for years I've been coming to see and I haven't seen you in a while and I miss getting the cotton candy in the third inning, whatever it is. I think New Yorkers have always looked to sports as like this great part of the city. And I think it's going to come back so strong and be so good. The first big event I think is going to be the US Open. I hope so. I hope they have it on time. And I think August, September, I think it's going to be amazing.
When I think about New York sports history and then think like the Knicks is going to be it.
The New York Knicks, who I don't think have won a playoff series in 20 years, or maybe they have, but I haven't been good in a long time. If they make a run in the playoffs, just watch, just watch. This city is going to be burning up with Knicks talk. And it's a shame that only so many people can go to the games right now, but I think it's only going to build like the, let's go out and watch the game. Let's go find a place to watch it together. Yeah. Are you vaccinated? You are. Let me come over and watch the Knick game with you. I really feel like in the next month or so, Julius Randle, and Derrick Rose and what they've got going on, the Knicks are going to have a really cool deal going on in New York. Let me give you the lay of the land on the Nets Knicks. So the Knicks are like this under the radar. Where did they come from? A bunch of discarded scrap heap players that have been discarded by other teams. Like this guy, Julius Randle's in the MVP talk. He's already been on two other NBA teams. Then you've got Derrick Rose on his like fifth team. And they put together and it's really blue collar team. You'd think that the Knicks would be this team with all the high priced players. And the Nets though are this like Avengers super team that really no one's got any love for. Like, the Nets just got here in Brooklyn. It's not like they've been here for 100 years. And then they piece together all these all-stars who sometimes play, sometimes don't. But it's funny because you would think the Brooklyn team would be like the hard scrabble, like blue collar, like underdogs. They might be they might have that New Jersey Nets feel, but the Knicks are like this. The Knicks are the blue collar ones. And then the Nets are suddenly this like superstar, super team. And I think that the Knicks are actually like the good guys in this thing. And then the Brooklyn team.
Oh, yeah.
And the Brooklyn team is like this like patched together corporate, you know, entity, like conglomerate of like what they put together, because there's no reason Kevin Durant, James Harden, Kyrie Irving, and Blake Griffin should ever be on the same team in one league. And yet here they are, this superhuman team.
Yeah.
I know these New York sports fans, they're dying to get out there. They will. And then you'll see like WFAN, the New York Post, it'll start being like that again, where everyone's calling the radio station, talking about their teams, complaining about relief pitchers. And it's going to be a nice diversion from what the talk radio and what we've been watching on CNN and MSNBC and Fox News the last year has been.
There's no better creature in the world than the people who call into WFAN. Like, I mean, at all.
To explain it to the listeners, it's like religion. It's sports only. They don't really go into other topics. So if the Mets blew a game, it is like the topic for 48 hours, and you'll just put it on and it's in the background, and there are people just agonizing, calling about it. And you,
I haven't been able to look at my son in 3 days.
It's like that. It's like that. It's so dramatic. And I think the last year it hasn't been like that because there's real life problems. So if you have someone calling up WFAN and crying about the Yankees loss, that's a great thing. That's a great thing. It means the world is kind of back on its axis.
To pivot just a little bit here, 2020 was also a year of a lot of protests. How did a lot of the protesting affect the sports world for you guys?
Oh, it was amazing. It was an awakening. And I think the players used their voice more than ever. And with social media and the ability to voice their opinions, like you saw guys that I didn't previously know were even leaders in that space. Patrick Mahomes was the reigning Super Bowl MVP and had not really weighed in on social justice or civil rights issues. And he led an incredible movement where all these different NFL players came out and spoke out, and Roger Goodell did a video, the commissioner, like I thought it was pretty great. And then to see that conversation, not just be a, hey, there's 3 weeks in the summer, we're going to do a protest and walk by the Barclays Center and call it, no, all season long in the NFL, at least, it was a major, major topic of discussion, and players continues to use those platforms. And the NFL actually provided those platforms, which was great to see too. NBA, same deal. I think a lot of these players, some of them said, I'm not even going down to the bubble. I'm going to use my voice and my platform to actually be in my own community and try to be a leader there. What happened with the Milwaukee Bucks, I thought was powerful. There was a lot of tough times and tough conversations and hard conversations. And I think at the end of it, I think at the very least, those who have been living in a tunnel or have blocked out those things, the conversation is now open. And there's platforms to use your voice if you'd like to. And if you don't want to, you can't ignore it. You can't just say, okay, that this is not going to affect me. I'm not going to worry about it. Sports and politics have never been an easy mix. I think now more than ever, sports and social justice and sports and civil reform, like that kind of stuff, has blended really well together. Or at least the conversations are starting.
Yeah, it's been very interesting because a lot of sports teams, a lot of athletes have been like notoriously apolitical. And then also, even if they had been political, the NFL specifically never really weighed in. They were usually in the background just being like, you know, do your thing, live your life. And then it seemed like this was the first time that the NFL, the NBA, you know, a lot of these different leagues kind of weighed in. Which I guess kind of sucks for Kaepernick. If he had waited like 2 more years,
No, but in truth, yeah. Kaepernick needs to be given a lot of credit for starting this conversation. I don't think if the Kaepernick situation doesn't take place over the last several years that there's such an open conversation today. So he might have had to sacrifice his career, and that is a shame. And I've known Colin going back to his playing days, and I think he obviously should have been in the NFL, and it's an unfortunate situation. But if there's anything, he has left a legacy where these players are now walking in his footsteps and they're following his footsteps, and they feel confident enough to have their voices felt. So I actually think, as horrible it is for Kaepernick and his playing career, I think his impact and his legacy is now, you know, tenfold of what it would have been if he had just been an NFL football player.
Why was Kaepernick the one to push forward this conversation?
Well, I mean, his career was sacrificed. It was, he put it on the line, and teams did not want to bring him in, did not want to try him out, did not want to give him the opportunity. And I think I don't want to say the word martyr, but in a lot of ways, you know, that conversation has not gone away, and it has laid the bedrock of what the conversations are now. And then you add in what's happening around the world and other things. I mean, then you apply it to the football field, but between the Kaepernick situation, then all the conversation and the fallout that followed, and then what we had this summer happening around the country, the NFL couldn't ignore it. They didn't ignore it. They had a program called Inspire Change, where they were raising money. They donated a lot of money to groups that, you know, in the previous decades, I'm not sure they would be reaching out to proactively, but I got to say the NFL has come a long way, and now they're leaders in the conversation too.
How have the New York owners and sports teams, specifically how the owners and the, you know, like the front management people for New York sports teams been with all of the protesting?
I think the leagues and the teams have all been on the same page. Like, there's no resistance to that stuff now. It's now, how can we actually make a change? You know, the Jets owner, Christopher Johnson, he actually is on the front lines with a lot of this stuff. And they had players, Kelvin Beachum and DeMario Davis and several others, where he would go in the community with those guys and be like, all right, let's actually do something. Let's not just write a check. Let's go and do something. And I think that goes a long way. And the new Jets coach, Robert Saleh, I know is a person of color. He's Lebanese. He's coming in and he's saying, let's be forward thinking in who we hire. Let's be forward thinking in which kind of people that I surround myself with. I think we're in a great place as far as we were progress wise. And this past summer was a major, major catalyst to making some actual changes and opening everyone's eyes.
What are you most excited about coming back as Corona starts fading away?
I cannot wait for that first game at MetLife Stadium, of like, whether it's Giants or Jets, and to hear the crowd roar. Like, I'm a sentimentalist with that. It's corny. People can roll their eyes. I've been covering the NFL for 20 years. To be at a game on the field when those players come out of the tunnel, it's exhilarating anyway. And I cannot even imagine the emotion based on what this market, and I say the market, I mean the New York, New Jersey region, based what they've been through as a collective whole, dating back to last March, one of the hardest hit cities and hardest hit areas in the world, to even have a moment of just release and have these players out there and seeing Saquon Barkley or seeing Zach Wilson, like, I cannot wait, and it's going to be amazing.
Are sports in NYC dead?
Hell no. Sports in NYC are just blossoming up again, and it's going to be amazing. We're in for a great run, bunch of young sports teams, and New Yorkers, they want to get on the subway. They want to see their team. They want to go to games. And I cannot wait until the bleacher creatures at Yankee Stadium can start chanting the names in full force. And I cannot wait to see Jets fans booing their quarterback like they should have been doing for the last 30 years. And it's just what it is. I love New York sports, and it will be back.
Drexton Clemens.
We did it. Every week we have this amazing Central Park show. Not to plug it, it's on West 100th Street in Central Park West. Guys,
plug it, baby.
We have a brass band. You're like a little
Dutch boy and there's a hole in the dam. Plug it up, baby.
It's like Saturdays at 8 o'clock. Guys, I'm talking too much. I'm not big on hyping anything up. It's one of the best shows in the city. Honestly, the best show in the city. Hyping it up. What I'm saying is
it's better than Lion King. It's better than Kinky Boots.
The waitress comes to our show. Sarah Bareilles is at our show. She's not going to write us a love song, but what she will do is if we ask for it, if we need one, she'll do it.
Anyways, every Saturday, 8 o'clock, we have a show in Central Park, and we like to record some of the podcasts there live. So this week, we recorded some good stuff.
Check it out.
You know, this week's episode was about sports. Did you ever play sports, high school, middle school?
Yeah, man, I played a lot of sports. I ran track. I played basketball, I played baseball, and I also did karate for 4 years. Oh, and I did a whole semester of badminton in college.
Badminton is a college thing?
I got a half a credit.
Did you go to Oxford? Is that?
Georgia Gwinnett Community College. No, it's Georgia Gwinnett College. They want to be a university now.
Yeah, I mean, the badminton scene in Gwinnett, I heard, is huge.
Huge. It's the biggest scene in the world, to be honest. It's a lot of birdies, okay? Yeah. A lot of birdies out in Atlanta. No, it's, I played badminton for an entire semester. And honestly, of all the sports I played, badminton was the most fun.
Why?
It is easily the easiest one out of all of them. It's like all of the fun of the sports with none of the skill. You get to watch a ball come at you at the slowest motion.
It is very funny watching on like the Olympics, because the speed and the amount of movement that they're doing their hands to, it's so big and fast. And like the birdie just like ghosts off it.
Like, well, that's the thing. It's more in the flick of the wrist than it ever is about like how hard you're hitting it or whatever. You can hit it hard and it'll go nowhere, but you flick it right on the wrist and it's like perfect.
It looks like whenever they shoot bullets at water. And the bullets like shooting, all of a sudden hits the water, just like, dude. It's Matrix. It's like the Matrix. Every birdie's like a Matrix.
It's crazy, but the fun part about it was because this was a nothing class, like literally I was going to get an A just for being there. We all would pretend to be the Williams sisters playing badminton. So we're just like, but like slow motion badminton playing. It was so much fucking fun. It was amazing.
It sounded like a turtle having sex.
Yeah, it does sound like a turtle having sex. It sounds like a cicada coming.
Yeah. Oh my God. And they only do that once every 17 years.
Have you seen any cicadas in New York yet?
No. Do we get cicadas?
I don't even know if we get cicadas.
We get cicadas like we get competitive Knicks teams. Like once every 17 years, it's the biggest story in the city. And then immediately we get over it.
And they were like,
you know, just having them around was kind of nice.
And then they go back underground and then we like try to rely on the Mets again. You know, it's fun. Yeah. It's a good time.
Oh, rely on the Mets. Yeah, listen, as a Mets fan, I can tell you relying on the Mets, it's bad. It's not a sustainable way to happiness.
All right. Rank your New York teams best to worst. Rank them.
No, I mean, so my teams, my sports teams in general are the Mets, the Jets, the Rangers and the Knicks. Not in that order. I'm a hockey fan, but I'm a Ranger fan first more than anything else. And it was funny, actually. So I had cancer when I was a kid. And when I was a cancer kid, I got to like meet all of the New York sports teams. But this was in 2000 when they were all terrible. So like there's so many pictures of a young bald me with New York Mets players that like are completely unrecognizable to me, that I don't have any idea who they am. And I remember that at one point, Make-A-Wish called my mom up. And she called our family up and she was like, oh, do you want to meet Derek Jeter? And I remember answering back, no, I am a New York Mets fan.
Imagine how much money that Derek Jeter photo would run you right now. You know?
Easily $3.
There's a man in New York right now with a shrine to Derek Jeter in his house, and he's just buying up all of the cancer kid pictures of kids with Derek Jeter.
There's got to be some cancer kids pictures with like disgraced football players at like OJ at like a Make-A-Wish event, or like Michael Vick at like St. Jude's Hospital or something like that.
But in the background, they're playing In the Arms of an Angel, and you don't know if it's about the player or the cancer kid. Like, who made it?
The commercial is like half for St. Jude's and half for saving this athlete's career. It's been like, listen, that's St. Jude's. We're here for the children. And also Ben Roethlisberger's PR company. So I didn't get to meet Derek Jeter, but I remember that when I told them that I was a Met fan, they were like, oh, you get to meet Benny Agbayani, I don't know who he is either.
I have no clue who Benny
is. I met him three times. They like kept on introducing me to this guy. This is how irrelevant of a player was. The third time that I met Benny Agbayani, he recognized me way before I recognized him. So he's coming up to this like cancer kid is like, I'm Benny Agbayani. I'm like, who are you? And he's like, from the Mets. And I'm like, I don't know. I've seen the Mets before. And he's like, I'm the right fielder for that. I'm like, oh, Benny Agbayani.
You know, what's funny is like, after a while, that's the only thing in his schedule. You know what I mean? Like
1,000%.
It's like play a little bit, be the right fielder that no one cares about. And then Thursday through Monday, all you're doing is just talking to cancer kids and hoping someone remembers you. Hopefully some cancer kid is like, oh, I remember being in the bed and then Benny Agbayani came in and that was the best thing that I've ever seen. And he's just like, you know what? It's worth it now, kids. I feel like it's a lot like running into Oates in the streets. You're like, oh, I feel like I know you, but
where's Hall?
You know, because I feel like you could run into Daryl Hall and be like, Daryl fucking Hall, holy shit. You know, but like you run into Oates, you're like, I mean, you look familiar.
So this is the other thing though, is that like all my teams were bad, but so I was a Ranger fan when I had cancer, and when I had cancer the Rangers were awful, but they had won a Stanley Cup in 1994. So I had met them in like 2000, which is 6 years past their prime. So everyone was like severely concussed. Everyone, it was all players who were like towards the tail end of their career. And when I met them, the team was like terrible. This is actual fact. When I met them, the survival percentage for my cancer in my age range was higher than their win percentage, like, at the time, which at that point, it's like, who was meeting who, you know, like that was the big thing. And then my favorite thing to happen though, when I met the Rangers, was that Mark Messier was on that team. Mark Messier was big. He's a very accomplished hockey player when he was on the Oilers, and that was the dynasty. Mark Messier was on that team. Mark Messier comes to the Rangers, right? He wins a cup with the Rangers. Then I meet him 6 years later, right? And he's terrible at that point. And when we had met him, so my mom, you know, I'm 10 years old. My mom comes with us to meet every single player that we meet. She doesn't care about any of these people. But we're going to meet Mark Messier, and my mom perks up. And my mom goes, oh my God, you're meeting Mark Messier? He dates Madonna. And all of a sudden, my mom got really excited to meet Mark Messier. So we end up going to meet Mark Messier. Mark Messier, he's this tall, bald guy, massive, you know, built, you know, like a linebacker on ice, walks over to me and my mom, and he goes, Mark Messier, nice to meet you. And he shakes my hand, and my mom goes, oh my God, you date Madonna. And what my mom didn't know was that they had broken up by that point. Mm-hmm. So in that moment, Mark Messier got very sad for like a second. So like, because my mom like ruined his night. He came over to do something nice for her. He was like, oh, you know, I'm going to meet a cancer kid. And then immediately my mom's like, remember your ex. Like, and then he's just like, he shakes her hands and then walks away.
And then he played better that year than he's ever. No,
I can tell you he did not.
Isn't it crazy that New York teams always play better after a giant disaster?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the thing about New York sports. New York sports is very specific because the fans here are better than everywhere else in the world. And I know that every state is like, we got the best fans, whatever. You listen to sports radio in New York, and these are different kinds of human beings. Everyone on sports radio on WFAN and stuff like that, they're calling in. They're just like, I haven't looked my son in the eye in a month because of Jacob DeGrom. Like, you know, these are people who like their life is derailed. I'm not joking. It's like New York sports fans and then like Alabama football fans. Like those are probably like the two.
Did you see the videos of Knicks fans just making fun of other teams when like they were just like, yeah, Trae Young's going bald. Yeah. Boom. Like people were fucking livid. That's what I'm saying. Sports teams just do better after natural disaster. Like after Katrina.
After natural disasters.
After Katrina, literally New Orleans, they played amazing. I'm from Atlanta. I think the only reason we haven't done well is because there's nothing that hits Atlanta. We're landlocked. We're just landlocked. And since nothing will hit Atlanta, we'll just never do great.
Well, like, 9/11, like after 9/11, like Mike Piazza had that very famous home run after 9/11 that like
brought
the city up. You know, those are moments that kind of stick with you. I wonder what that moment's going to be like after coronavirus from New York. The Knicks, they didn't end up winning, but it did feel like a championship. The Knicks making first round here felt like if we were in the finals.
Yeah, I think that was a win for New York City. But I don't think that's the win. I don't know what the win is going to be.
Well, it was so funny because it was like so good that they got in. And then immediately, they were like, oh, yeah, that's right. We're the New York Knicks. I totally forgot about that. Oh my gosh. Doesn't matter. We're too good for winning.
We're too good for winning.
That's why the Rangers don't win Stanley Cups. We're too good for Stanley Cups.
Yeah.
Too good. We don't need Stanley Cups approval. You know whose approval we get? We're sponsored by Chase Manhattan, baby.
Chase Manhattan. All right. We're Dr. Fauci approved. Okay.
That's right. We're a couple blocks away from B&H Photo. That's all the recognition. Hey,
there you go. Bringing it home.
You know, New York has a really massive and interesting non-professional sports community out here. And one of the more interesting leagues that is in the city, I'm not even going to explain it. We're going to let my friend Wes explain. He's in a football league that is very, very not professional, but still money gets made in these kind of indie leagues that are around the city. So we spoke to my friend Wes, who is pretty much a football mercenary. That's what I'll call him, and hope you guys enjoy.
Yeah, man. So, I mean, I played all sports growing up, you know, baseball, basketball, football. Definitely fell in love with football middle of high school. I got introduced to these cash football leagues here in the city. Like, they'll have one in the Bronx, one in Harlem, one in Queens. It'll be a Friday night, Saturday morning, Sunday morning. All these tournaments at that time, which shit, we're going back like 10 years ago, were worth about like $5,000 grand prize. You fast forward to now, these tournaments are still going strong and they're all worth like $20,000. They go around four times a year. So that has definitely kept me active. But after college, I played arena football for like 4 years. And for some reason, this street football thing, man, is just, it's so much more fun. It's so much more entertaining. The talent is really good. You got people that are striving to still get to the NFL, that should have been in the NFL. And you got people that, you know, they definitely weren't looking for that path, but this gives them, you know, the activity and still the passion for the game.
What makes it more fun in your opinion?
Man, it's so ratchet, bro. It's like New York authenticity at its finest.
Explain cash football.
So it's called the TFL, or Triborough Football League. Basically, you got about like five or six different tournaments that go once a season. So four times every year, you'll have a regular season with about like 8 to 10 games, then your playoffs, and the winner will take home, you know, no, it's usually the cheapest A division grand prize is $15,000 right now. So you have the A division and then you have the B division. Your A division is flooded with talent, man. It's, you know, really people that should have been in the NFL, you know, young guys that are trying to get to the NFL. And it's really like an all skilled position tournament. It's 7-on-7 football. Now the B division is where you get a little, you know, it gets a little ratchet. You have a lot of homegrown teams. Basically, I'm from Valentine 194. Grew up with a whole bunch of kids that played on that block. And we still play in the B tournaments to this day. Now I'll play in the A tournaments as well with a team that's, you know, full of studs. And the B tournaments where you get your homegrown activity, man. You got teams from everywhere, Queens, Brooklyn, Lower East Side. And it's just a lot of shit talking, a lot of, you know, Hennessy drinking on the sideline from people watching. And just the bets too, man. Every game, there's thousands of dollars on the line, either from the teams or just people watching, betting on every play, on the drive. Like, I got score, no score. I got 100, no score. Like, it's crazy, man. It's pretty hectic.
It's the most professional, unprofessional league, it sounds like.
Yeah, most unprofessional, organized football you can find, man.
Wait, you played arena football? Is that what you said?
Yeah, man. I played 4 years of arena football. I went to ASA College, which is a private college, the NCAA. Mm-hmm. Had a pretty good season there. And it was just my first year. I got introduced to arena football. It was a combine. I don't know if y'all know about arena football. Basically, it's just 50 yards smaller than the NFL field. On the sidelines, there's no out of bounds. There's just like a 4-foot wall, cushioned wall. That makes, you know, makes it entertaining, is, you know, the thrill of that. But I played in Philadelphia, man. My first 2 years, I was literally driving from the Bronx at 4:30 in the morning, going to Philadelphia, going to practice. I still had a few classes I was taking care of. Going through that grind, man, you know, just trying to see if I could get a D1 transfer. Kind of like being raised where I was, through everybody else, you know, we used to just get money on our own. So once cash football really was popping off for me, and like arena football kind of like was doing well, but I had time to work a full-time job out here, it kind of just turned into this like 4 or 5 job flow I felt like I was on. Like I was still playing arena, still playing cash, still working full-time. It became a lifestyle, man. I definitely feel like I managed to create that on my own. And in this cash football league, I found hundreds of grown-ass men that are doing the same fucking thing. Mm-hmm. They're working full-time job with families or either dealing with investments or other situations where this is just a lifestyle for them.
Arena football less lucrative than cash football, yes, is what you're saying.
100%. 100%. I had a contract. My first two seasons, I only made about like $30,000.
What? So how much would you say that you're making on average now with cash football?
So there's two different ways to really get paid out here in cash football. I'll give you a rundown. The first way is, you know, you have some players that are like special talent and they're just getting paid probably $100 a game. Unless you're a quarterback, you probably get like $1,000 a season. And then if you win, depending on your relationship with the owner of the team, you guys agreed on how much you're going to get if you guys win. Now, I've actually played for a team for a long time since I started called the Hustlers, who we were basically all just a group of hired hitmen.
Great movie like, on Amazon Prime. Yeah. You're named after that? I assume you're named after the J-Lo movie? That is.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, that was the inspiring part. I'm like, yeah, it's just from the Bronx, man, just like us. Yeah.
Cardi B's on your team.
That was a team. It's actually South Bronx is where the team was kind of like picked up by this guy named Rob. And he did a great job of just getting a bunch of guys together that, you know, they cut us a little payday. And we went for 3 years. We won 4 out of 5 tournaments, man. We went on fully paid vacations twice a year, all of us. And we made him over $100,000 profit for 3 years straight.
He made $100,000 on you guys every year for 3 years?
After he already took care of everybody on the team, took us on vacations, his profits alone was over $100,000.
That's insane.
Just because you guys were dominating the football leagues?
What's really mind-boggling is that we were dominating, and there's so many tournaments. Like, these 5-6 leagues, one is in Coney Island, one is in Casino, one is in City Island. If you get enough leagues, you understand that we were dominating, and he made $100,000. But there were 2 other teams that made the same amount of money as well and won just as much as us. So wow. That's how much is available out there.
So you just have to be super fucking talented. And you could be making better than an arena football just with cash and having what seems like way more fun.
Well, I mean, also, but it's the owner though. Talk to me about who owns these teams.
Yeah. Cause how much are you guys making that the owner's not making?
Here's a great example. So the team with the Hustlers is a guy named Rob. He's the owner, right? Mm-hmm. He puts up the league fee. He gives us uniform money. He pays the ref fee. Every game, there's about $100 you got to pay towards the refs. So even though it's probably like $1,000 to enter the tournament, you got $100 every week coming out for the refs. Like I said, uniform. When we're there too as well, he's buying food for the team, water. Like he's taking care of everything financially. So when we do win that pot, that $20,000, it's going to him, you know? And then he'll divvy it up how he's going to divvy it up. But I'm pretty sure he's still taking more, over 50% of that. So if you got us playing in 4 or 5 tournaments 4 times a year, we did for those 3 years, we won 4 out of 5 tournaments every season.
So right? What does that look like for you to go taking home, if you don't mind me asking?
No. I'm just a wide receiver. So you got people that play both sides, wide receiver and safety. Then you got the quarterback who's going to make the most. He was giving me about $100 a game when he first started. And then we ended up like making about like $500-$600 every tournament I won. Like if we won, I got a few $100 extra. Like that's one way of making money. Now, what we did, it was a group of us that was on that team realizing everything. We put our own team together in the A now. So now it's been a full year, like right before COVID actually. Basically now us 10 guys are going to put our own money into this. We're trying to divide that $100,000 a year now. So we're investing a little bit as well.
What did the owner say when you guys left?
It was a movie, man. The first tournament we played against him in the Final 4 tournament. Sent them home. Like, it was a lot of shit talking. It was crazy. But it's all love, though, at the end of the day. That's one thing. It's a real New York thing, man, how you see people could talk shit so fucking disrespectfully. And then after the game, hey, bro, yeah, you know, it's all good. Like, crazy.
So how did you guys adjust to, like, coronavirus and, like, the restrictions and stuff?
When everything kind of got shut down, we stopped as well. And I believe it was a few months in, man. They put it up online that they were going to do a 2-day tournament, mask required, and it didn't happen. There was a lot of hype about it, and it didn't happen.
Why didn't it happen?
There was an issue with the park and allowing that many people all at a situation. So when that happened to me, that was like, I can't lie, like that was one of the first times I really was like, oh shit, yo, this COVID shit is really shutting down everything. Like it was a reality check from the freaking street. It took street football to actually give, not only me, I know a lot of people that was like, oh shit, yo. And then you see how everything else followed. It really stood like that for almost a whole year.
So now that things are opening back up again, so what has been the vibe amongst the Cash Football League?
Cash Football League's been up and popping already. I think right before the summer, we started up again. the first tournament actually was a 2-day tournament just to get things back. And the cops had came to shut it down. Mm. He had his permit available because he had a permit for a forward year already. So basically the cops had came to shut it down, and I seen the most freaking New York thing ever. You just seen like hundreds of maybe like 80 people around, maybe like eight or nine cops. And you would think it would get like crazy. Like, oh, you're not kicking us out. No, these guys was like saying everything right. Like, hey, you don't understand. This football is all I have. Like, how are you going to take this away from me? We're in the house. We're in masks. We're at an open park. And just like pretty much like protested in their own way to the cops right there. Till the cops really turned and just left and said, you know what? Yeah, we understand. And the next day there was a like a post about all these 128th Street, a bunch of football players protesting to play. And since that day, the tournaments have been on and popping, man. We already lost the championship.
Thanks, right. Nature's healing.
Yeah, everything's back to normal.
No, you know what's interesting about that is that, like, you know, me and Drex, we run a show in Central Park. And the cops have occasionally come up and been like, what is this? And the twice that they bothered us, the first time they bothered us, they were like, what is this show? And we're like, oh, you know, it's just like people telling jokes in the park. And then the parks ranger gets on his walkie-talkie and just goes, does anybody know anything about people telling jokes in the park?
Yo, what the hell?
Yeah, but there used to be a guy, a park ranger, who would just, who would just drive by and just say wild shit and like go out. Yeah. He'd be like, fuck the Mets, and then drive off.
We get like heckled as they're driving away.
Chase him down.
He's like, go I'll back to law school. And then he drives
away. Yeah. Last question for you. Are sports in NYC dead?
Oh, man, no, not at all. They actually need more exposure. Some way, somehow, there's a YouTube guy, the only one I can shout out to give you guys the best perspective, is Skip Capture. He's definitely the influencer behind exposing this TFL thing for what it is and putting it on YouTube, putting games, raw footage of games, edited highlights. Like, he's really cool to follow and actually keep up to date with what's going on. I think there's so many underground basketball tournaments I know about, big time softball tournaments that are getting like really big, that they just need that type of exposure. Those people that are going to see it for the first time and like, oh shit, like this shit is real. Like, it's far from dead, man. It's definitely far from dead.
Are sports in NYC dead? No.
The Mets still suck. They're adorable doing it, but they suck.
The Yankees are still pretentious assholes.
The Knicks still give Spike Lee heart palpitations every year.
The guy that owns the Jets is somehow also the guy that's in charge of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine.
The Rangers are still finding ways to not win the Stanley Cup, even though I've asked God multiple times to make that happen.
And the Giants? Fuck the Giants.
Yeah, this is a Jets podcast, baby. Fuck the Giants. People calling into New York sports radio are still more interesting than the pundits on CNN, Fox News, and OAN combined.
Sports in New York is not dying. It's not dead, and it'll never be dead.
And if you think it is dead, I got 20,000 people in Madison Square Garden singing Sweet Caroline that respectfully disagree.
NYC is Dead is a production of Embassy Row. Our executive producers are Julia Cassidy, Eden Sudley, Anna Marie Johnson, and Leslie King. This episode was produced by us, Drexen Clemens and Eitan Levine, a.k.a. the Pastrami Boys. This show is edited by Maureen Begas.
You can follow us on Instagram at thisguydrex, at Eitan the Goalie, and at NYC is Dead Podcast. Or email the show at nycisdeadpodcast@gmail.com. See you next week.